Good morning. It is good to be at Waterworks this morning, and I greet you in the name of our precious Lord in Christ. That's why we're here this morning, and it is good to be here. This morning, we're going to start off with a little story. I got a story for the children. So children, come on front, gather around the table up front here. You can just stand. Right, we're going to just make a big U, the little children kind of up front, the bigger children maybe stand in the back. Come on front. Yep. Gather close. I won't bite. All right. Can somebody tell me what these are? They're sponges. Now, when I was a little boy, I would sometimes go with my dad. Do you know my dad? Yeah, I think you know my dad. And do you know what he does for work? What he did for several years, he doesn't do it so much anymore. He would lay flooring. Specifically, his favorite was tile. So, when Pastor Jim is back next Sunday, you go ask him about setting tile. Yeah, you'll see a smile come on his face. He enjoys setting tile. As a little boy, I would go with him. And I didn't like setting tile because it was dirty and dusty. I would have to take the tile out to the wet saw and saw it. I would have to mix mud up, cement, that we could cement the tile down. I would have to get buckets and buckets of water to clean up the grout. But you see, it was really good for me. Through that, I learned something about sponges. After we would spread the mud on the floor, Dad would set the tile. He would put spacers in between. And if you ever look at tile, there's a little crack in between. And it's filled with, do you know what's in that crack? Grout. Yeah. Do you know about flooring? I think you do, yeah. Grout would go in between the tile. You see, after we would set the tile, we were ready to fill up all those cracks. And so my dad would take the grout, he would spread it over. But do you want the grout in between the tile or on top of the tile? In between the tile, yeah. You don't want the grout on top. So how would we get rid of that? A sponge, yeah. But you can imagine, if you ever, the grout's kind of like cement of sorts. It's dirty. What do you think happened after Dad would put the sponge in the bucket of water and then brush it over the tile the first time? What do you think the sponge looked like? Dirty. So he would, I'm going to illustrate, have some dirty water. Anybody want to drink dirty water? No, we don't like dirty water. After he would rub the tile over, or the sponge over the tile to get rid of the grout, he would squeeze it out, and that's what the water would start looking like. Dirty. Now, does dirty water clean up other things well? No. So he would say, Zach, you go get a clean bucket of water. Yeah. And then he would use a clean bucket of water to clean it over the last time, and it looked so good. So I got really good at carrying buckets of water. But here's something I learned about sponges. I'm going to saturate this sponge in the dirty water. Okay? So I did it in the dirty water. And I'm going to saturate this sponge in the clean water. Okay? Okay? Squeeze that out. We'll set them right there. All right? Now, everybody close your eyes. Close your eyes for a minute. Everybody close your eyes. You saw that I dipped one sponge in the dirty water and one sponge in the clean water, right? You saw me do that? Close your eyes. Don't peek. Don't peek. I'm going to mix these sponges up so you don't know which was which. Okay. Now, open up your eyes. Do you know which sponge was dirty water and which was clean? You guys are pointing to different sponges. That proves my point. You don't know. How can we find out? Let's squeeze it. Should we squeeze it and see which is which? Okay, let's start with this one. What's going to come out of this sponge? Ooh, that looks pretty dirty, okay? Some of you were pointing at this one was dirty. What's going to be in here? Do you think it's going to be clean? That's clean water going back in the clean bowl. Let me tell you something I learned about a sponge. Sometimes you can't tell which is the dirty sponge or the clean sponge until you squeeze it out. When you squeeze the sponge out, you can tell what's inside. Another thing I learned is I thought, okay, let me saturate this sponge completely with clean water. If it's saturated completely with clean water, it shouldn't soak up any dirty water, should it? I mean, it's totally full of clean water. Let's see what happens. Now we're gonna dip it in the dirty water. The clean water kept the dirty water out, right? Yeah, it didn't. So another thing I learned about sponges, even though it's completely saturated, there's still room for more. Two things I learned about sponges. Number one, you see what's inside when you squeeze it. Secondly, even a sponge that is full still soaks up more. It soaks things around. Now, later in my message, I'm going to talk about the sponges. So you listen for when I do that, okay? You may go back to your parents. My sermon this morning is not on sponges, but it's going to illustrate a point for me later on. I have a song that I would like to kind of use this morning. How many of you know the song, Speak, O Lord? A couple hands kind of going up. I would like to teach it to you this morning. So this morning we're going to sing the first verse together. And at the end of my sermon, I would like to sing all three verses. There's three verses to it. So sing along if you know it and if you can. Speak, O Lord, as we come to you to receive the food of your holy word. Take your truth, plant it deep in us, shape and fashion us in your likeness, that the light of Christ might be seen today in our acts of love and our deeds of faith. Speak, O Lord, and fulfill in us all your purposes for your glory. I recently was introduced to that song and really appreciated the lyrics, and so it kind of talks about something we're going to be talking about this morning. Trivia, I don't expect you to remember this. Do you remember what I shared on the last time I was here, back in February? If you were to ask me, I had to look back on my notes too, so. The Beatitudes, Matthew chapter 5, yes. This year I've been going through Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes. Good job, Grandma. And I would like to go back there, back to Matthew 5, and I'm going to go back to the second point I looked at in the Sermon on the Mount. So first off, we looked at the Beatitudes. So you can start turning there a while if you wish, to Matthew 5. Who is the target audience in Matthew chapter 5? I believe it's his disciples. I think I called 12 young men up here, and we illustrated climbing the mountain. And as Jesus drew his disciple, or called his disciples with him on top of a mountain, he sat down. And this was common back in this time of rabbis who wanted to share something important with their followers. So he sat down and he started talking to his disciples. This was his first real message, per se, as he started unpacking what he wanted. The crackling stops. He wanted to sit down and tell his disciples what this new kingdom was all about. Why was this important? It was something new. It was something different. It was something that he was trying to call them to something higher. And as we look back in the Beatitudes, he calls them to being poor in spirit, to mourning, to being meek, to being hungry and thirsty, to being merciful, pure in heart, to be peacemakers. And as I go down through these things, I have the feeling of wonder and anticipation of experiencing those in my life. So it's more a personal thing. Principles and beatitudes evident in our life. It's an invitation to happiness, or joy might be a better word. As I go through the Sermon on the Mount, I see some things that are evident. I see that God is a God of growth. He is calling us higher. His whole vision for his disciples was to call them higher than the law that they were held to. The law was a means to have a relationship with them. And the time of the Jewish church had lost sight of that. And he wanted his disciples to know that, I want you to keep growing in me. It's not about checking off the boxes of the law. It's about seeking a relationship with me. So in the Sermon on the Mount, I see that Jesus is revealing how inadequate we are when we try to do things on our own. So I think we should go back to Matthew 5, 6, and 7 often. And he points to the fact that it's not about the actual things that are done. He's worried about the heart. And out of a heart that is right, the things will come. We don't do things to be saved. Things happen when we are saved. Jesus is about, it's about being. He's not after what men do. He's after who they are. So this morning, I would like to look at Matthew 5, 13 to 16. Jesus is with his disciples. He just talked about the Beatitudes, the principles he would like to see in them. Matthew 5, verse 13. You're the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. You're the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. This morning I've entitled the message, Salt and Light. And I brought along some illustrations for this. I got some salt. In a little bit, we'll have some light. And this morning, as we look at Jesus talking about salt and light to his disciples, I want us to see the purpose of salt and light. Why does salt exist? Why does light exist? I want us to see the purpose of that. So that we show off our Father. Now, the word show off might make you cringe a little bit. Might make parents cringe a little bit as we think about little children wanting to show off. It's something more than that. It's not to draw attention to ourselves. It's to point the attention to someone who deserves it. So this morning, I want us to see the purpose of salt and light so we show off our Father. And Jesus uses two illustrations for his disciples as he's trying to call them higher. He calls them to the Beatitudes, the things he wants to see in their life, their lives. And then he says, it's not just about you, it's about sharing it with others. That's why he uses salt and light. So let's look at salt, first of all, because that's what he tackles in verse 13. Jesus says, ye, he's pointing to his disciples, are the salt of the earth. Now, what's the context that the disciples use salt? They used it to preserve things. This was back before the time of refrigeration and freezing. They would use salt to preserve things. It kept it safe. You would dump salt on meats and different things, and it kept it from going bad, from going sour. Leviticus 3 talks about using, it was used on a grain offering. So part of that, one of their offerings required salt. It was a sign of a lasting covenant. Because does salt go away? Salt just stays. Does salt ever go bad? Is there an expiration on salt? No, it stays. So the disciples use salt as part of the Jewish tradition in the grain offering as a sign of a lasting covenant. I'm pretty sure they used it as flavor. There's some of us who like to use quite a bit of salt on our food. I finally found a cookie that I can tell my wife to make and take to family gatherings. A new cookie she made, you sprinkle a little bit of salt on top. Well, Nate doesn't like salt on his cookie. So this is great, because we can take cookies and there's leftover cookies for me. But you see, the purpose of salt, Nate, is to make the sweetness come out. Salt has a purpose. Mixed with a little bit of sweet, it makes the sugar pop. That's the disciples' context of salt. Okay, so Jesus says, all right, you're the salt. Can you just see the disciples sitting here thinking, okay, we're salt. Why is salt needed? What is he going to say? Salt of the what? The earth. Does that mean the earth is going to go bad if it doesn't have salt? Yes. And Jesus is referring to not necessarily the material things, but the interactions with people. When is salt needed? It's needed to preserve something. It's needed to bring flavor. It stops decaying. It seasons. It flavors. And I don't even need to illustrate this point much, because you just look at the world around. Can you not see the decay? We talk about it often. We look and we're, sometimes I say, Jesus, come back today. How much worse can it get? Things are bad. And so Jesus says, disciples, this is what I want for you. I want you to be the season and the flavor to preserve the people you meet and interact with. You're the only hope. So people are pointed to me. So Jesus says, you're the salt of the earth. But if the salt has lost his savor, I asked the question earlier, when does salt go bad? Did you ever check your expiration date on your salt at home? Anybody know after how many years it goes bad? Does salt ever go bad? Everybody's stopping to think. I had to think about this too. I read over this verse many times. Hey, yeah, sure, when it loses its flavor. When does salt actually lose its flavor? Where its impact? I think the only time, maybe I should ask the science teacher. I think the only time salt loses its savor is when it's contaminated or when it's mixed with something. Imagine if I got salt and mixed it half full of sugar. Would it have its impact? No. I think the only time salt goes bad is when it's contaminated and mixed with another substance, and therefore it loses its impact. So Jesus says it is possible for salt to lose its savor. And if that happens, where is the earth? How is the earth going to be salted? How is it going to keep its flavor? The Greek for lost savor, if we were to translate that kind of directly into the English language, means tasteless or becomes foolish. Jesus calls his disciples, "You're the salt. Your life, the principles that I portrayed to you in the Beatitudes, these principles that I'm going to grow in you, that's the salt of the earth. But hang on. It is possible for you to lose that savor. And that savor is lost when it is contaminated, when it is mixed with other substances. It's tasteless. It becomes foolish. And when that happens, it's no good. You might as well dump it out. Trodden underfoot of men," is what Jesus says. Jesus wanted his disciples, by the Beatitudes that flow through them, to be the salt of the earth. And he warned them that they can lose that savor and flavor when they become contaminated, when they become mixed with things that are not good, that affects their savor. Other places that the New Testament talks about salt, in Mark 9, it says salt is good. Have salt in yourselves. Luke 14 says salt is good, but salt can lose savor as well. Similar thought that Jesus portrayed here. In Colossians 4, it talks about let your speech be seasoned with salt. And James 3:12 says, "A fountain cannot yield fresh and salt water. You can't mix it. Fresh and salt water doesn't mix. It becomes salt water." That's Jesus' illustration of salt. Okay? So do we see the purpose of salt? It savors, it flavors, it preserves. But it is possible to lose that when it becomes contaminated. Next illustration he uses is the candle. "Ye are the light of the world." Did the disciples have electricity? No. So a candle was a very vivid illustration for them. They had lamps, they had candles, they were used to this. So that was the context that the disciples were in. And Jesus says, all right, second illustration, you're the salt. You're also the light of the world. When is light needed? When there's darkness. Jesus says, you're the light of the world. What does that say about the world? There's darkness. Back to the salt. Jesus was saying, the world is decaying. We need salt to preserve it. Jesus says, the world is a dark place. And so I want you to be beacons of light in the world. What does light do? We're asking what's the purpose of salt and light? Light pushes away the darkness. And we all like to be in the light. We want to see what's in front of us. We want to see the way to go. And so the world needs light when it becomes dark. So Jesus again points to another illustration, and that is light. He says, a city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. How does he illustrate light? Have you ever been to a place that was like a light up on a hill? They say some cities sit up. Actually, the city of Jerusalem is supposedly up on a hill. And so it's a light to the valleys around. It points the way. Maybe you can think of a lighthouse sitting up on a rock, warning ships. It's a light chasing away the darkness, warning ships of where not to go. That's light. City that is set up on a hill cannot be hid. You can't hide it. Another thing about light, when you have a candle, when you have a flashlight, you don't hide it. You hold it up. You don't put a bushel over it and try to cover light unless you're trying to hide. But you let light shine. You let it out for people to see. That's where a candle is used, Jesus says. You don't put it under a bushel, but you put it on a candlestick, and it gives light unto all that are in the house. And so that was the context of light. Salt savors and flavors preserve. Light chases away the darkness. So then he says, in that same analogy, the same way you use a candle so that people can see, the same way I want you to live your life as a light. That's why I want the Beatitudes to be evident in your life. So you're a light to others. It's not just about you. You see, the Jewish people were so focused on the law being about just them. Jesus wanted it to be more than that. He wants your light and the salt of your life to impact those around you. It's not just for you. And that brings us to the why. So he says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works. And what's the whole purpose of this? What's the why behind letting your light shine? We're supposed to show off our Father so that he is glorified. Doesn't that give you a picture of something bigger than just yourself? You see, you don't share your light and share your salt with the people you meet to bring attention to you. It's so you can point to your Father, which is in heaven, and say it's because of him. It's something bigger than ourselves. That gives me a purpose for getting up in the morning. Because as I live my life, as I focus on the Beatitudes being evident in my life, as I ask God to let those things be grown in me, it's not about me. It's so that I can point the people I interact with to the one who deserves it all. That gives purpose in the growing. That's what Jesus' relationship was all about with his disciples. So those were his two illustrations, very simple, yet very vivid, as Jesus calls them to be salt and light. So that's what Jesus said. Now, I want to give you a couple observations of things I learned, things I see, kind of the undertones that I think Jesus was trying to portray to his disciples. Back to salt. How many like salt on your food? Okay. How many like when you sit down to a nice lunch, maybe here in a couple hours, and you got your whatever foods on your plate? I saw a lot of hands. You said you like salt. What happens if you see a big pile of salt on top of your plate? You excited? Some people probably would be. This thing's salty good. No! I would like, what is this? Are you serious? Like, where's the water? Give me a gallon of water. I'm going to need something to wash this down. No! You don't see a pile of salt. Salt is hidden. Here's the thing I see about salt. The reason I think Jesus used salt as an illustration, you can't, or I should say, shouldn't see salt. But you taste the effects of it. So as you think about your life, it shouldn't just be a pile of salt that you dump on somebody, bringing down the hammer of maybe a beatitude that Jesus is teaching you. No. It's the little pieces of salt that you just, the kindness that you spread, the truth that you speak to a brother or sister, the arm around the shoulder here and there is evidence of something inside you that God is growing. Salt shouldn't be seen, but the effects of salt are evident when it's working. So that's one thing I see about salt. You shouldn't see it. It's seasoning. It's hidden, yet the effects can be tasted. Second thing about salt. When does salt go bad? When it's mixed. Jesus was warning his disciples that when they become mixed with the things of the world, that's when they will lose their impact. And today, I hear so many people and myself, well, how much can I do but yet still remain salty? I still want to remain good. But if I just do a little bit, the salt that I got is going to kind of take away the bad stuff that I got going on. Or feeding on things that you know you're not supposed to. Whether that be movies, songs, whatever, the list of books, whatever time spent on yourself. Jesus says the moment you start mixing, it becomes ineffective. And that's what Jesus wanted to warn his disciples on salt. Don't be contaminated. The question we should be asking is, how much can I do for God so I don't become contaminated? What can I say no to take away the effects that it has on my saltiness? Salt can become contaminated. The concept of the sponge. Children, what happens to a sponge when you squeeze it? You see what's inside. Sometimes on the outside it looks okay and normal. We couldn't tell the difference between the two. But when it's squeezed, you see what's inside. What happens when you're squeezed? Maybe the water that you're dipping in, we need to think about. So watch for what comes out when you're squeezed. Also, no matter how full of good things we think we are, wherever we go, we are constantly soaking up the things that we come in contact with. Sometimes I think that I can just keep out the bad that I come in contact with, and I hope we can. But our lives are kind of like sponges, and the things we interact with do have an effect on us, and we are constantly soaking that up. And if we're not careful, we become salt that is contaminated, no good. That's the second thing, observation I see on salt. Thirdly, I find it interesting how he uses salt. Why doesn't he talk about light first and then salt? Maybe I'm reading into it too deep. I see that you must be salt before you are light. What is salt? Something that's hidden. It's flavoring. It's seasoning here and there. If we focus on what Jesus wants for us, I'm going back to Beatitudes. If we focus on that and what's inside, when we're squeezed, those things will come out. And then that's when we're a light. We don't try to be a light with all some outward showings on the outside before we take care of what's on the inside, because it's not going to taste good if we try to be a show. First off, we focus on salt, and that is not being contaminated. Thinking about what we're dipping into. You must be salt before you are light. Now, let's move on to light. Some things I see about light, two observations. Light shines when it's out in the open. Light doesn't shine when it's under a bushel, Jesus says. He says it shines when it's out in the open. For our light to shine, we need to be involved. We need to give opportunity for our light to shine. Our life should be that of sacrifice and service so that our light can shine to others. If we just keep it to ourselves, it doesn't shine to other people. First off, start with your family. Your light should shine to your family. Be careful how we talk about our children. Parents, I know as we go through a life, and I'm in the middle of it, raising children, sometimes I can speak of tones of drudgery and taking care of my children. They're being bad again. What does that say to our children? As families, we have a opportunity to serve our families well. Are you letting your light shine there first? And then as we let our light shine, as we're involved in opportunities of reaching our family, then we let our light shine in church. We're involved in our church to let our light shine there, not about ourselves, so we can point our up to Him, to God, to Jesus. It's because of Him. That's why we do it, not for attention for ourselves. And as the church collectively gets together, we then look for opportunities to let our light shine to people around us. Throughout the week as we're at work, we create opportunities to let our light shine to the world around. We don't keep the light just for ourselves. That's why Jesus says, don't put it under a bushel, let it shine. And here is the purpose that I see in our shining. Why do we shine? We are shining to bring heaven to earth. Are we living just to get to heaven? Or are we living to bring glimpses of heaven down to earth? That's letting our light shine. It's not just about living good enough to get to heaven. It's about allowing God to grow us so our light shines, so people around us get little glimpses of heaven. And that's why he says, let your light shine. They see your good works so that they glorify your Father. So why do we shine? That gives me purpose. I allow God to grow me so that I can be salty. I allow God to grow me through the hard times so that I can be a light, so that I can give people glimpses of heaven on earth, so I can point them to my Father. A key word here, as I shared this at Myerstown, somebody came up to me afterwards and said, verse 16, what's the first word? What's the first word of verse 16? Let. It doesn't say make. Say make your light shine. No, you just let it shine. You don't carry your candlestick and take it all over. You give opportunity for it to shine. And God does the rest. Let it shine. And your light will shine when you focus on the saltiness, not being contaminated. When you focus on allowing God to grow you through the Beatitudes, allowing those things to be evident in your life, that's when your life will shine. So this morning, I leave you with a question. Are you the salt and light? Or have you allowed contaminants into your life? What water are you dipping into? Are you giving yourself opportunity to let your light shine so God can let the things that are in your life shine to others around you? That's what we are called to do. And when the church is full of people who are salty and full of light, I get excited about the impact that can have on the dark and decaying world around us. So I invite you to stand, please, and I would like to sing the song, Speak, O Lord. And as we sing, what really jumped out to me in this song was the lyrics. So think about the lyrics as we sing them, as it calls us for the Lord to speak to us, for us to be a light, and at the end, the third verse, so that the church can be built. Speak, O Lord, as we come to you to receive the food of your holy word. Take your truth, plant it deep in us, shape and fashion us in your likeness, that the light of Christ might be seen today in our acts of love and our deeds of faith. Speak, O Lord, and fulfill in us all your purposes for your glory. Teach us, Lord, full obedience, holy reverence, true humility. Test our thoughts and our attitudes in the radiance of your purity. Cause our faith to rise, cause our eyes to see your majestic love and authority. Words of power that can never fail, let their truth prevail over unbelief.
Speak, O Lord, and renew our minds. Help us grasp the heights of your plans for us. Truth unchanged from the dawn of time that will echo down through eternity, and by grace will stand on your promises, and by faith will walk as you walk with us. Speak, O Lord, till your church is built and the earth is filled with your glory.
Please remain standing for a prayer and then Lee, if you'd have a chorus of song afterwards. Heavenly Father, thank you for the opportunity to gather with your people this morning. You've spoken to us. Thank you for the words that you gave to your disciples on the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes that you said you want to be evident in their lives. I pray that those could be evident in ours. And as we think about that, may we allow the effects of that, the saltiness of that, the light from that, to impact those around us. And so this morning, as we go from here, I pray that we could be salt and light to the people, to the world that we connect with this week. I thank you for the church here at Waterworks. I pray that you would bless them. And as we fellowship here and head on our different ways, we ask for you to go with us, guide us, and direct us. In your name we pray. Amen.